All right, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on Kof Kedem and Aleph. The Mishnah is continuing thematically what we saw in the previous Mishnah. Yo, again, it's outside the world of Menachot, but describing us in Yonim issues where there are ikul, where one thing is me'akev, the other thing, or within a certain context, it is me'akev. Shiva kenei menorah makvim zedzeh. The seven branches of the candelabra are makvim zedzeh. You need all seven branches. You can't just have a partial menorah. Shiva neirota makvim zedzeh. In addition, the cups on the top, the word ner in the Mishnah and in the Gemara does not mean a candle like we use it today. Ner in their day meant the receptacle that held the oil for the candle or for the flame to be lit. So here when it says that the shivat neirota makvim zedzeh means the receptacles at the top of each of the kanim, that is makev zedzeh. Shtei parshiot shivim mezuzah makvot zodzu. The two parshiot of mezuzah are me'akev each other. You need both parshiot of mezuzah. Both parshiot where it says, Tokta ma mezuzot peitecha. So you have to have those two parshiot that have mezuzah mentioned them. Shema v'ayayim shamoa. Now they both have to be there. And the question of whether they likely have to be on the same cloth, according to this, meaning that you have to have them on a single cloth, they have to be written together, not separately. In addition, afilu ktav echad me'akvan, even a single letter missing from them, is me'akev. And as Rashi notes, the source for that is Uchtav Tam, which we darshan as Ktivah Tamah, Ushlema. That it says Uchtav Tam, and therefore that Ktivah must be a Ktivah Tamah, full and complete writing. That's why you can't be missing a letter. So they are Me'akev each other, the two parshiot. But beyond that, within any point in the Mezuzah, if you're missing a letter, if you've done something wrong in terms of the Ktivah, then you have a problem that it is also Pasul. Daliyat Parshiot Shebitfilin, Makvin Zodzo. The four parshiot tefillin are also makev each other. So again, here you have the four parshiot, which are Shema Vayam Shemoah Kadesh Liko Bechor Vayakev Yecha. So those are the four parshiot in the Torah where tefillin are mentioned. They have to be placed in the tefillin. There will be a difference between the Shel Yad and the Shel Rosh, where the Shel Rosh has four compartments and the Shel Yad has one compartment. So we'll see that later on. So that might be one distinction between them. But makvin zodzo means that you need all four parshiot. If you have tefillin without all four parshiot, you don't have tefillin, or you don't have what you need to be yotze. You might even have a problem of bal tigra, that you're not allowed to reduce the number of parshiot, because if you put more in, you might be in a violation of bal tosif as well. So that's a separate discussion we spoke about in the Gemara and Sanhedrin about bal tosif and bal tigra with regards to how you have such a violation. Afilu tavachad makvan. And similar to the mezuzot, if you're missing even a single letter inside of the tefillin, they are psulim, and that's why every once in a while we check our tefillin and mezuzot to make sure that none of the letters have cracked, nothing is wrong, or there was no mistake made in the mezuzah, the original mezuzah that was put up, or the tefillin that were put there. Again, that's something we do on a regular basis, not every year, but something we do generally twice in 7 years. People check these items. With tefillin gasot, people sometimes wait longer because of the integrity of the batim and their ability to hold for much longer time, so they check them more infrequently. And as Rashi notes, the source for that is, by tefillin it says, havaya, vayu letotafot. So the word havaya over there says they must be in this manner. And the word vayu appears by all the dalet parshiot, and therefore all of them demand that they be written completely without any chaser, without any yeter there. Dalit tzitziot, makvot, zoet zo. The four tzitziot are makev each other. Sha'arbatan, mitzvah achat. Because all four of them are a single mitzvah. It's hard to know what the source exactly for this is, because we don't really have anywhere in the Torah where it tells us that the four tzitziot are makvot, zoet zo. And only can you say, vayalachem letzitzit. And you words the word haya is havaya, and therefore it's makev. But otherwise, there's no indication that the four tzitziot are makev each other. Each one of them is a separate mitzvah. He might be learning it from the same word, vayalachem letzitzit, which is written in singular. It seems to indicate the four tzitzit are vaya. Each one of them is a tzitzit or an independent mitzvah. But obviously this has ramifications as to whether you think the four tzitzit are makvot zodzo versus you think each one's an independent mitzvah, including the possibility of putting in a single tzitzit on a bucket of arba kanfot. According to the Chachamim, you have a serious problem. You do that. Not only are you not yotzei the mitzvah, but you're probably in violation of bal tigra in that case. As according to Rabbi Shmuel, if each one's an independent mitzvah, each one that you put on possibly could be a mitzvah independent of the other one. And therefore, even if the one is pasul, the remaining three might be fine. So that's, again, more to discuss about this, just framing maybe possible differences that would come up between these two positions. Now, the Tosafot at the top says, Tema, the lo chashiv gvi'im prachim mikapturim. We're going to discuss in the Gemara the fact that there are other components of the menorah that are me'akev, including the gvi'im, the cups, prachim, the flowers, mikapturim, are the bowls that were associated with the menorah. Those are the decorative parts of the menorah. And they are ma'akev each other. Maybe it's because it's only associated with gold that we say that. We're going to see in the Gemara there's a miut that gold governs with regards to this, and that these items don't have to be there if you don't make the menorah out of gold. All the requirements of the menorah are spoken in a specific situation, which you're going to see is zahav, in the case of gold. But otherwise, it's interesting that they only mention the Neirot and the Knei HaMenorah. They don't mention the fact that these other decorative items are also Makev at the Menorah, even though in the Gemara we will see that that is the case. So now, it's obvious that the Gemara is just following the order of the Mishnah. It doesn't really give you reference as to where we are in the Mishnah, but the first item in the Mishnah is the Menorah. So my time, what's the reason that we say over here that these things are Makev? Havaya Ketiv Behu. And so by the Pesukim of the Menorah, it says, V'sit HaMenorah Zahav Tohor Miksha Te'aseh, and then HaMenorah Yerecha V'kanah Gviyah Kavtoreh Perecha Mimena Iyu. So again, here you have the Havayah, which we know before is an instance of Ikuv. So those words tell us that the Menorah, the Kavtoreh Kanotam Mimeno Iyu, that all of that stuff has to be Iyu. It's subject to this Havayah, which means that it must be done in this way, otherwise it will be me'akev. Tanrabanan, menorah ita ba mina eshet u mina zahav. This is an important qualification, and this is what we're going to discuss now, of how integral this is to the menorah. The Braita says that the menorah comes from eshet. Rashi over here does interesting statement about the etymology of the word. He says, asiyata chaticha shlema, it is made out of a single block of gold. Then you bang on it with a hammer until it comes out as a single item. He learns that out from the word miksha, something that is banged on. It's something that is hit, because the necessity to make the menorah from a single block, you would have to chip it out. You would have to chisel out the menorah from the single block of gold. So even though we use the word today even to mean miksha, means a single unit or a single group, and the miksha here means a menorah who's made out of a single piece of gold. Nevertheless, Rashi says the etymology of the word is from miksha nakshan, to bang on. Because the only way to form something from a single block is to bang on it, not to solder it together. And so that's how the Gemara gets to, from the word miksha, it tells us that we need eshet. And number two, it is it must be made of gold. And the Gemara is going to now focus on this. Asa min agrutot psula. You make it out of pieces of metal, not a single block. That's problematic. So if you take pieces and solder them together, it will not work. Mishar mine matechot ksheira. Then if you use other metals, that is fine. That the Gemara is going to understand. Maishna min agrutot psula. Why is it that by the grutot you can't do it? Because the pasuk says miksha and havaya. This is what I said to you before. The pasuk says vasita menorah zahav tohor miksha te'aseh, that there's a requirement that it be miksha, a single block, and iyu is at the end of the pasuk. So you have a havaya that's associated with the miksha. Sharmi nemi dechot nami. Why don't you say the same thing with other metals? Zahav v'havaya. Because the pasuk says vasita menorah zahav tohor. You have the EU at the end of the pasuk that also tells you that it's me'akev. So the EU is modifying not only the gviyah kaftareh upirachea, it's also modifying the miksha, it's modifying the zahav. And that tells you that all of these items are me'akev. So why are you differentiating between the zahav and the miksha? So why is the bright to say, as far as miksha is concerned, that is me'akev. Other metals, that's not me'akev. What's the difference between them? Amar kara te'aseh, there are both, shar mine matachot, which allows you to do it out of anything. Just make it. Where it says, V'ema l'rabot grutaot. Why don't you say that it comes to include broken pieces, where the gold does not hold? So again, the pasuk says, V'asita menorah zahav tohor miksha te'aseh. Ha menorah yirecha v'kana gviyah kaptoreh perecha mimena iyu. So you had the iyu, which was the ikuv that was associated with it. And the EU seems to be modifying both the Zahav and the Miksha. The Gemara says, well, that's because it says Te'aseh, which means make it any way. Any way that you can, or any way possible, you can make it. If that's the case, why are you only saying Te'aseh changes the fact that you have to use Zahav? Why doesn't it also change the fact that you don't have to use Miksha? So that's the nature of the Gemara's question. It says, Losakadatva, Da Miksha Ktiva Havaya. Because the word Havaya appears on Miksha. It says Miksha Ta'aseh, and the end of the pasuk is EU. It says, Te'aseh Nami Yamiksha Ktiv. Wait a minute, the word Te'aseh is also there. It says Miksha Te'aseh. So how do you know it's Miksha Ta'aseh or Miksha EU? They're both words that follow the word Miksha. And truthfully, the word Te'aseh is closer to the word Miksha. So why won't you say that it affects the Miksha as well? So Gemara says, Miksha, Miksha Le'akev. The word Miksha appears twice in the Parshiyah to tell you that it is Akev. It says, V'sita menorat zav tohor Miksha Te'aseh. That's in the first pasuk in Perek Kapei in Shmot, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. And then in Pasuk Lamed Vav, it says, Kaftarehem uknotam mimenu yu, kulam Miksha Akat zav tohor. So there again, the word Miksha appears. So the Miksha is twice the Akev. Gemara says, Zahav Zahav, Nami La'akev. Wait a minute, the word Zahav appears twice too. In that same pasuk, the word Zahav appears. Asita Menorat Zahav Tor Miksha Te'aseh. And then the other pasuk, Kaftarehem Uknotam Mimenu Yu, Kula Miksha Achat Zahav Tor. So Zahav appears twice also, so why isn't that Me'akev? So hi mai. You can't compare them. Iyamart Bishloma, if you say Mina Gruter Ot Psula, if you make it out of pieces, it's Psula, Misharmat Mine Matekot Ksheira, and from other metals, then it's Ksheira, Hainu Zahav Zahav Miksha Miksha Ledrosha. Then I have something to do with the duplication of Zahav Zahav and Miksha Miksha. Eliyamar Tzmina Gruto Ksheira. If you say that, if you make it out of component parts, it's okay. Bisharmine Metachot Psula, on the other hand, from other metals is problematic. Zahav Zahav Miksha Miksha Maidrash Be. What are you going to do in terms of a drasha? There's nothing to do with the extraneous words. Maidrasha. Well, let's understand what the drush is that they're looking at that's convincing them of this. Titania, Kikar Zahav Tahor. It says about the menorah that it has to be Kikar Zahav Tahor Yaseuta et kol hakelim ha'ele. It has to be made out of a single Kikar. Ba Zahav, Ba Kikar. If it's made out of gold, then it comes as a block, a Kikar. Ain't a Ba Zahav, ain't a Ba Kikar. If it doesn't come from gold, you don't have to make it a Kikar. Gibiyeha, Kaftora Upiracheha. Ba Zahav, Ba Gvia, Kaftarim Uprachim. If you bring it mean out of Zahav, then all the ornaments or the decorative items that are placed on the menorah have to be done. The Gvim, the Kaftarim, and the Prachim are subject to the fact that it is Zahav. Ainaba Zahav, if you don't make it out of gold, Ainaba Gvim, Kaftarim Uprachim. Then those items do not need to be on the menorah. So now, what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that we have a duplication of Miksha, duplication of Zahav. So now you're going to tell me both are Me'akev. But that's going to leave you with a problem, which is we have a bright that indicates one is Me'akev, one is not Me'akev. We have Te'aseh, which says be more inclusive. We have EU, which says that it's exclusive. It says it is Me'akev. How do I know to associate the Te'aseh with the Zahav and the EU with the Miksha? That's basically the Gemara's question. Why are you telling me that the Miksha is Me'akev and the Zahav is not Me'akev? Bar says, because the Zahav is associated with the Te'aseh, the Miksha is associated with the EU. Bar says, how do you know that? You could just say just the opposite. So Bar says, I have Miksha, Miksha, I have a duplication of Miksha, which tells you that it's La'akev. Bar says, I have a duplication of Zahav also, that tells you it's La'akev. But then I run into a problem, then neither of them are going to fit into the Pasuk HaBal, because then I don't have anything to put into Te'aseh. So Gemara has to say, one of the two has to be Lav Dafka, that it doesn't have to be this way. So which one are you going to pick? If you pick Miksha being Lav Dafka, then what are you going to do with the duplication of the word Miksha? You don't have any limud, or you don't have any drusha for that word. On the other hand, if you say that Miksha means Dafka and the duplication tells you it's La'akev, and Zahav, Zahav, you're going to ask me, oh, why do you need Zahav? I'll tell you why I need Zahav. I need Zahav to teach you that there's a miut here. Zahav means you need a kikar. Zahav means you need Gvim, Kaftarim, Uprachim. That's why I have the extra word Zahav there, because they actually teach me something that only when it's gold are these things true. When it's not gold, these things are not true. If you want to say, why don't you just say the opposite? It's okay. You'll say Zahav is Davka. Miksha is something that you can do away with. And you'll say the same thing here. You'll make the same drasha. That when it's Miksha, you have to put on Kvihim, Kaptarim, Brachim. And when it's Miksha, you have to make it out of a Kikar. The problem with that is that the word Miksha is not written by the Kikar. Kikar Zahav Tahor The word miksha doesn't appear there. The word zahav does appear there. And that's why we associate zahav with these items. And that's why we have a drusha for the word zahav. Where it says, why don't you take that a little further and say manami. Bazab akanim. If it comes with gold, then you have branches on it. Ain't a bazab, ain't a bakanim. Then you don't have to have branches on it. Because it says, kaftorem uknotam mi menuyu kulam mikshakat zahav tor. So if you say knotam, the kneha minorah, the kanim, come from zahav. Maybe only when it's zahav do you need kanim. When you don't have zahav, you don't need kanim. Gemara says, how will pamot mikre? That you can't say because that's no longer a menorah. That's a lamp. If you don't have branches, you're not talking about a candelabra anymore. You're talking about a lamp. And so a lamp is not what the Torah is speaking about. So now the Gemara says, ze maseh menorah miksha zahav. This is the way the menorah is put together. It's miksha zahav. It's a single block of gold. Ba zahav, ba miksha. If you make it out of gold, then it needs to be a single block. Enu ba zahav, enu ba miksha. It doesn't come as a single block. Miksha the seifa the mayato. What do you do with the miksha in the latter part of the pasuk? Emelute chatzotzrot. To exclude chatzotzrot. So what the Gemara is not telling you here, it's a little secret, what they're not telling you is that the word zahav appears numerous times in these parshiot. The two parshiot that we're speaking about is one is in Parshat Truma. Tells you all about the Klei HaMishkan, including the menorah. And the other parshia is the beginning of Balotcha, where we also have the menorah. In the parshia, we'll do it backwards. In Balotcha, the word miksha and zahav appear. Ze maseh menorah, miksha zahav. Ad yirechad pircha miksha hi, kamarei asherah Hashemet Moshe, kein asat menorah. So first of all, you have the word miksha appear twice, and the word zahav appear once. So that's what the Gemara asks over here. What do we do with the miksha of the seifa? You told me what you do with the miksha of the resha. You didn't tell me what you do with the miksha of the seifa. The answer to that is it comes to exclude chatzotzrot, which we're going to learn in 1 second, that drasha. Then the beginning of the pasuk is miksha zahav. That teaches you that only when it's made out of gold does it have to be a single block. It's not made out of gold. It does not need to be a single block. So there we have a drasha for both the miksha and zahav at the beginning of the pasuk. You go back to Parshat Truma, the word miksha appears twice, that we know already. The word zahav in that parshia appears 4 times. So now, where are the drashot that are associated with the words miksha and zahav? So we already explained that the miksha comes to teach you that miksha is me'akev, that it's something that is absolutely necessary. When it's made out of gold, it's absolutely necessary. And it will be me'akev. If you make it out of component parts when it's gold, you will not have a menorah. The other hand, we said that gold is not ma'akev. So what do you do with all the words gold that are found there? So now, that's the question of the Balei Tosafot. He says the Gemara does not explain all of them. So we explained one of them, which is the one in Balotcha. But the other 4 that appear in Parshat Truma, we didn't explain what they're doing there. So the Balei Tosafot explained, one zahav is for the kor din, that it has to be made out of gold. That's still chatzchilo, that's the way we wanted to make. So that's one. We had 2 drashot in the Braita. One drasha in the Braita was kikar zahav. Only when it's zahav does it have to be a kikar, which is a size. So it only has to be a kikar's work, a block work. If it is made out of zahav, if it's not zahav, it does not need to be made out of a kikar. The other thing we learned also was that zahav teaches you that givieha, kaftoreha, upiracheha have to be only there if it's made out of zahav. The kanim, we said that's not true, even though it mentions the kana there, but the givieha, kaftoreha, upiracheha are governed by the zahav. So that means that only when it's gold, you have those adornments. But you don't have gold, you don't have those adornments. So now you used 2 of the words zahav out of the 4 that are there. 2 of them, one to be miut for kikar, one of them to be miut for kibiyah kaftarel parecheha. The 3rd one you used to tell you that it has to be made out of gold. That's the core word. You need one more time to tell you that it's actually made out of gold. So then we have 1 extra zahav. The Balei Tosafot say that that extra zahav is used in the klalu pratuklau, which is coming on the 2nd half of today's daf. So that's the usage of all these words. Again, the word zahav appears 5 times between those parshiot. We've explained for this 3 of the drashot of those words in zahav. 1 more of those words is for the core mitzvah of it being out of gold. And the last one is a klal u'pratukha, will come in the 2nd half of the daf. We have the word miksha appear 4 times. 1 miksha to teach you the din of miksha, period. That's the core mitzvah. The 2nd miksha to tell you that it's the yikuba. The 3rd miksha tells you that it is only when it's zahav is it miksha. If it's not zahav, it's not miksha. The 4th miksha comes to teach you miksha for menorah, not for the chatzotzrot. There we have a use for all the words of miksha. So those are the limudim that we get from the use of those words multiple times within the parshiyah of Truma and Balotcha. Although Tosfot does point out a problem that it seems that the drashot of the psukim and the brightot seem to use the same zahav, or the same word zahav, for multiple drashot, rather than spreading it out amongst the words of zahav that are found in the psukim. So he just gives the which drasha belongs to which word zahav over here, and says that the brightot aren't so careful about which word zahav that they're referencing to, but there are multiple words zahav, and each drasha will be associated with one of those words of zahav. Now, the last thing the Gemara said is that we need a second mikshah that's mentioned in Parashat Balotcha to teach you not chatzutzrot. Because, v'atanyo, we have a braita, chatzutzrot ayu ba'im min ha'eshet min ha'kesef. So the word eshet again means from a block, kesef means from silver. The chatzutzrot that were made, according to the way Rashi learns over here, it references to the chatzutzrot of Moshe Rabbeinu, the trumpets that Hashem instructs in Parashat Balotcha for Moshe Rabbeinu to make. If you make it out of pieces, that's fine. On the other hand, if you make it out of other metals, it's problematic. So this is just the opposite of the menorah. The menorah, the type of metal was not ma'akev, but the fact that it was a solid block was ma'akev. On the other hand, for the chatzotzrot, it's the other way around. The metal, the fact that it's kesef, is ma'akev. The fact that it's a biksha, a single block, is not ma'akev. Why is it that other metals are problematic? Because it says kesef and it says havaya. It says you should make for yourself two chatzutzrot kesef, miksha taseh otam, that they have to be made in a single block, v'hayu lecha, and they will be for you. Vayu is a havaya. So Gemara says kesef and havaya teach you that it has to be made out of silver. So Gemara says, mina grutot, also making out of component parts, not a single block, nami. Over there it also says, miksha v'havaya. It's the same pasuk. It says, miksha taseh otam v'ayu lecha. The miksha and the havaya come together, and that means it should be me'akev. So why don't you say that the issue of miksha is also me'akev? Gemara says, mi'et rachmana gabim menorah. That's that word by the menorah. We said, what was that extra miksha for? Miksha he v'lo chatzutzrot. That was the second mikshah that is mentioned in Parashat Balotcha, which is Zem HaSem Menorah Mikshah Zahav, Adri Echad Percha Mikshah He, and not something else. The Miyut has come to tell you that only the Menorah is Mikshah Me'akev, but by the Chatzotzrot, the Mikshah is not Me'akev. Tosfot over here discusses a difficulty that we already discussed in the Gemara and Avodah Zarah, which is that from the Gemara and Avodah Zarah, it sounds like the Chatzotzrot do not need to be made out of silver. So the easy way to reconcile between the two of them is to say that these are the chatzotzrot of Moshe, they have to be silver, and they're not used with dorot. And the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, speaking about the chatzotzrot, that were the dorot, and those don't have this requirement of being made out of kesef. The problem is that the Mishnah in Tamid sounds like they did have chatzotzrot of kesef that were there even past the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. And so then the question is, how do you reconcile that? The Teres Rabbeinu Tam, we saw this in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah as well, the shtei chatzotzrot ayu l'kohanim. The Kohanim had two chatzotzrot. The shel kesef, they had those that were made of silver. Ve'levim shel karnei be'ema, the klei shir. And then the Levim had regular chatzotzrot that were made out either from animals or other materials that were there for the musical instruments. So he suggests that they were chatzotzrot that were blown over the korbanot by the Kohanim, which are the chatzotzrot shel kesef that are being mentioned here. And that which the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says that they're not made out of kesef is speaking about the musical instruments of the Levim. So there were different chatzotzrot that were found in the Mikdash, and that's how he explains whether they have to be made out of silver, don't need to be made out of silver, depends on their purpose or who was using them inside of the Mikdash. Otherwise, he gives another answer, which we find in the Gemara in Shabbat and in Sukkah, that the words shofar and chatzotzrot were conflated, meaning that in certain periods of time, the shofar was called a chatzotzra, and sometimes the shofar was called a shofar. And so what he suggests then is that the chatzotzrot that are mentioned in Avodah Zarah are really a shofar. And a shofar, of course, isn't made out of metal or is not made out of silver. And that's speaking about a shofar. Chatzotzrot that are spoken about in Tamid are speaking about the chatzotzrot, real chatzotzrot, from the time of the Mishnah where they called chatzotzrot chatzotzrot, that's kesef. But in the Gemara, they already called the shofar a chatzotzra, and that's what it's speaking about in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. That's another way to reconcile. Although that answer is somewhat problematic, because the Gemara in Avodah Zarah is speaking about something that was used together with the Korban. And together with the Korban, we only blow chatzotzrot, we don't blow a shofar. So that's a much more difficult answer, and therefore they favored the first answer of the Rabbeinu Tam, which is that there were different chatzotzrot in the Mikdash with different purposes. There were chatzotzrot of kesef for the korbanot. There were chatzotzrot, not matter of kesef, which were part of the musical accompaniment that the Levim played in their orchestra. So Tan Rabbanan, kol hakelim shasa Moshe b'ksherim lo u'ksherim ledorot. All the utensils that Moshe Rabbeinu put together were usable in his time, but also usable beyond his time. I mean, they were things that were put into service in the Mishkan, and they could be used in the Mishkan or the Mikdash later on. These are kelim that are internal usage. As long as they were still functioning, they were fine to be used. On the other hand, chatzotzrot sheirot lo upsulot ledorot. The chatzotzrot that he made in the Midbar are only for his use, and they cannot be used ledorot. And that's even though there are chatzotzrot ledorot. We know that. There are a special chatzotzrot, or special purpose within the chatzotzrot of the Midbar, which is that it was for the Kriyat Ha'idah, it was for calling the people together, for calling the Nisi'im, and for traveling. You know, they had a different purpose there. But there's an additional purpose of the chatzotzrot, which is mentioned also in Parshat Balotcha, that they're blown over the korbanot. They're part of the instrumental accompaniment to the korbanot. That could apply even beyond the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. So why is it that when he makes the trumpets, he can use them, but they can't be used after that point in time? So the Gemara says, chatzotzrot my time. What's the reason that the chatzotzrot have a short shelf life? They can only be used during the lifetime of Moshe Rabbeinu. If you say, because the pasuk says aseh lecha, which again, that's the pasuk that's by the chatzotzrot, which is that you should make shtei chatzotzrot kesef, and it says aseh lecha, lecha v'lo ledorot, for you particularly, but not for generations afterwards. Elamiyata, if that's the case, what about the aron? It says vasita lecha aronates. It says that you should make for yourself a wooden aron. Hachanami de lecha v'lo ledorot. You can tell me now again that that wooden box is only for Moshe Rabbeinu, not for the Dorot. So then, if you're going to say Lecha indicates that, we have other times when the word Lecha comes out. Also happens to be by the Luchot, Psal Lecha, that you should have to make the Luchot. But that means that they're only good for Moshe Rabbeinu's time, not beyond that. And that the word Lecha appears in other instances. Here the Gemara brings Vasita Lecha Ronates. Now, there is a machloket there in the Psukim and Dvarim. We've spoken about this in Baba Batra in other contexts, which is how many Aronot were there when it came to the Mishkan and it came to the Mikdash. Rash claims that the Asit Lecha Aronates was not the Aron that was associated with the Mishkan. Rather, this is the Aron that went out to them to Milchama. And that there were two separate Aronot, one that went out to Milchama, that one that stayed in the Mishkan. The Ramban disagrees over there and says the Asit Lecha Aronates just made it for Moshe to have when he came down from the Har. He had to put the Luchot somewhere while they built the Mishkan. So he has to store them somewhere. That was the Aronates. And as still others say that Vasilach Aronates is the Aronates that Bitzalah made. But that is a major machloket in the Rishonim as to how many Aronot there were, meaning that was there one Aron or two Aronot. And even if you believe there are two Aronot, the Aron that's mentioned here by Moshe Rabbeinu, is this the other Aron or is this the Aron of the Mishkan? That happens to be a machloket Rishonim. But at least over here, the Gemara just wants to understand, Vasilach Aronates, is that also just for Moshe and not the Dorot? Ella, ilaman damar lecha mishalcha, ilaman ki biyachol mishalcha ni rotze yoter mishalehem. We have another reason for the drasha there of lecha. Why is it asid lecha aronate? Either it means mishalcha, you have to fund it, you pay for the aronate. Ilaman damar ki biyachol mishalcha ni rotze yoter mishalehem. Or it's as if Hashem is saying, I would prefer yours than theirs. Meaning that you're equivalent to all of Klal Yisrael. Your aron would be just as good to me as an aron built by all of Klal Yisrael. So those are either the two drashot. So Gemara says, why don't you say the same thing by the chatzotzrot? You fund the chatzotzrot, or your chatzotzrot are more precious to me than the chatzotzrot that are made by all of Klal Yisrael. Okay, so then why would you then say that yaseh lecha by the chatzotzrot tells you that it's only Moshe Rabbeinu can use them? I say, shani hotam damakra lecha lecha trei zimnei. Because it says, aseh lecha vayu lecha. It says, you make them, and this is what they're going to be used for. So the word lecha there appears twice. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu is the only one who is allowed to use them. Now, that is akin to something that we see not only by Moshe Rabbeinu, but we saw in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, as well as in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, which is Sorfim al Melachim. That when a king was finished with his reign, they used to burn his possessions after the reign was over. The Gemara wanted to know if that was Hukot Akum. Is that something in a practice, an idolatrous practice, or is that a practice of the other nations, which is something that we should not be emulating or not something that we should be doing. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah and Sanhedrin have different answers to that problem. How you reconcile those answers has a big impact on the din of Hukot Akum. We discussed that in those places because that has major impact on what you think is a problem of Hukot Akum. But nevertheless, we did, the Gemara then did conclude that they do burn the possessions of Jewish kings. The reason is because it's Kavod HaMelech. It is an honor for the king. If someone else rides the horse of the king, and if someone else takes the wife of the king, that in some ways is a denigration of the king's standing. The king has a certain standing, and nobody else can reach that standing of the king. If someone else is to ride the horse, that would imply that he's on par with the king. If someone's to marry the wife of the king, all the possessions of the king, these types of things have a certain association with that particular king, and we burn them, we get rid of his horse, we get rid of certain things, to indicate that when he died, that honor, that kingship is gone completely, and then the next king will have his possessions and establish himself, but nobody else can then take or use the possessions of the king. That's actually what Adoniyahu tries to do after the death of David HaMelech, when he comes and asks and petitions Bathsheba to give him Avishag HaShunamit. He says, I have one request from you, Bathsheba. Can you ask for Avishag HaShunamit to be given to me as a wife? Shlomo HaMelech, when Bathsheba comes and tells him this, gets angry and says, are you giving away the kingdom from me? He gets very upset. And yet, we don't see anywhere there that he explains why he got upset. But it's self-evident why he got upset. He knew what Adoniyahu was trying to do. If Adoniyahu marries Avishag HaShunamit, that's an indication that he is the king. Because only a king can marry the wife of an ex-king. That's an indication of being the king. If Avishag HaShunamit was viewed as a wife of David HaMelech, then if Adoniyahu takes her, that almost crowns him as the next king. So what he was trying to do was use a back door to get around Shlomo HaMelech. And Shlomo reads the plan and says to Bathsheba, you're selling me out because you're going to give Avishag HaShunamit to Adoniyahu HaMelech. But that's this idea. So similarly over here, with regards to the Chatzotzrot of Moshe Rabbeinu, the idea that you will retire the Chatzotzrot after the death of Moshe Rabbeinu has the same meaning, which is that, Aseh lecha shtei Chatzotzrot kesef, mikshat aseh utam, vayu lecha, mikra yidal masa et hamachanot. They're for your usage. They're for you to do this. You are the king of Israel, and they're for your usage as the king. Yes, there's an additional usage, which is at the end of the Parshiyah, which is the Bnei Aaron HaKohen Mitzkuba Chatzotzrot. They build a Chatzotzrot with the accompaniment to the Korbanot. When there's difficulties in the land, when there's a Rosh Kodesh, when there's a Yom Simcha, when there's a Moed Eichem, the Chatzotzrot are used. But that is separate from Vayu Lecha. These Chatzotzrot in particular have a use as you per the king, being a figure of royalty. And therefore when he retires, meaning that Moshe dies, so too the Chatzotzrot are going to be retired because they belong to a king. All right, Tani Rav Papa Breid Rav Chanin, Kamei Rav Yosef. So Rav Papa Breid Rav Chanin brought a brayta in front of Rav Yosef. The brayta said the following: Menorah hayta ba min ha'eshet min ha'zav. Menorah comes from a single block and gold. Asah shel kesef k'shera. If you make it out of silver, then it's fine. Shel batz, if you make it out of tin. V'shel avar, if you make it out of lead. V'shel gisteron, Rashi calls it light tone or lashon achrina metal. Seems to be that it was a cheaper metallic alloy, which would be the metal translation that he's giving. Or lighton is probably something along the lines of a copper or bronze that was used over here. So if you make it out of any of these items, Rabbi Posel, Rabbi says that's no good. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yudu, Makshir. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yudu says that's fine. Shel eitz, v'shel etzem, v'shel zkuchit. You make it out of wood, you make it out of bone, you make it out of glass. Divrei HaKol Psula. Everybody agrees that that's not a good menorah. Amale my datcha. So then Rabbi Yosef says to Rav Papa, what are you thinking? Amale ben mar u ben mar klalei uprate darshe. Rav Papa explains to him, this is what I think, that Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda both use the method of drasha called klal uprat uklal. Miu mar savar ma prat mifurash shomatechet av kol shomatechet. It says, Vasita Minorat Zahav Tor, Mikshat Haseh. So you have Vasita Minorah, so that's a cloud. Zahav Tor is a prat. Mikshat Haseh Minorah is a cloud. So you have a cloud uprat uchlau. And now the prat is Zahav. Remember, cloud uprat uchlau, and Nodan Eloke Ein prat. That has to be similar to the prat. What is the character trait of the prat that we're looking for? The question is, what does the Hav tell you when it's the prat? So he says, Marsaver, my prat mifrash shel matechet, Hav kol shel matechet. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yudas says, it says metal. So as long as it's metal, it will qualify. The unique character of Zahav is that it's metal. So I'm going to include all these things, batz, avar, gisteron. These are all metallic elements, and therefore they're fine for using for the menorah. Umar Saba and Rabbi believes, ma prat mifurash davar chashuv, av kol davar chashuv. There's another character trait to Zahav. Not only is it metal, it's also a precious metal. So then only things that are precious metals will be okay. And that's why he says that if you make it out of silver, that's fine. But you use these cheaper metals, that you can't do. Amalei, samedidach mikamei didid. So then Rabbi Yosef says, that's a nice idea, but I'm going to tell you that you should wipe out your breita, because I have another breita, and it's going to trump your breita. And that is the Tanya. Kli sharet, shashtan shalets. Rabbi Posel, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yudah makshir. If you have kli sharet that are made out of wood, Rabbi says that's no good. And Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yudah makshir says it's fine. But my kamif legay, what are they arguing about? So now, Rabbi Daresh Klalei Uprate, Rabbi subscribes to the school of thought that when you have a general principle and then a particular item, you follow the limud of Klal Uprat, or Klal Uprat to Klal. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yudah Daresh, Ribuye Umiute. He follows the school of thought, Ribuye Miute Ribuye. We've spoken about this many times before, but just on a generic basis, the big difference between them is that a Klal Uprat to Klal, the Prat is defining the Klal, the prat is qualifying the klal. Then when you do it as a ribuy or miut, you see each step or each item as being a separate entity. So the ribuy is merab akol, and the miut is also memayit, but it's only memayit one item because you have two ribuyim and one miut over there. And each miut will be memayit one item. So that's the difference between a klal prat uklal and a ribuy miut or ribuy. Now the Gemara explains. Rabbi darshe klalei uprate, basita menorat klal, zahator prat, Mikshata se'a menorah, chazar uklal. That's a klal, uprat uklal. Iyadana don't pain a prat. Ma uprat mifurash shel matechet, av kol shel matechet. So here, Rabbi has the position that before Rav Papa Bar Chanin had assigned to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yudah, now he's assigning that to Rabbi. And Rabbi says the menorah has got to be made out of metal, or the kli sharet need to be made out of metal. As long as it's metal, you're fine. Yossi Rabbi Yudah, darish ribuye miyute. Vasita menorat riba. Zav tor miyit. Mikshat aseh menorah chazav riba. Riba umiyut riba. Riba kol, you include everything. Umay rabbi, rabbi kol mile. You include any type of material, will be fine. My miyit. So you have one miyut here. So when you have one miyut, you're going to be miyit, the thing that is the most far-fetched, or the least likely to be included in this, and that is, kli miyit shel cheres. It excludes earthenware. Earthenware is the equivalent of their chad pami, disposable items in that day. And so that's what's going to be discarded. But that means eighths wood is still good to be used for the menorah. That's his explanation of that breita. And Rabbi Yossi says, take out your breita, because my breita is a better breita. My breita is more exact, and I'll explain to you the difference. Now, Rav Papa Bar Chanin, since they're arguing about klal uprat uklal, what's the definition of the character of the prat in his breita? Rabbi Yossi says, they're arguing about whether you use klal uprat uklal or riboy miyut to riboy. And therefore they come to different conclusions. That's why the breita have different views. Rabbi's view in Rabbi Yossi's breita is basically the equivalent of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda's view in the previous breita. So Rabbi Papa says back to him, Adar Rabba, Samedi Dach, Mekamei Didi. Should erase your breita because of my breita. Because at least says the word menorah in my breita. Your breita says Kli Sharet. Who says Kli Sharet is speaking about a menorah? He says, Lo Sakadatka. Rabbi Yossi says, can't do that. The Tanya, because I have additional brito that are basically going to back up my position. I have additional brito that if you use my brito, they all make sense. If you use your brito, they all seem to be in contradiction. The Tanya. Ein lo zav, mevi af shel kesef, shel nechoshet, shel barzel, shel bedil, v'shel ofaret. You're supposed to bring it from gold. If you don't have gold, bring silver. If you don't have silver, bring copper. If you don't have that, bring iron. You don't have iron, bring. If you don't have tin, then bring lead. So these are all metallic items. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yudah, makshir af b'shel eitz. So this seems to back up exactly what Rabbi Yosef was saying. Here we have a breita that particularly says that it should be made out of zahav, which is clearly speaking to the menorah. It's not made from zahav, then you can use any metal according to Rabbi. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yudah includes eitz. That sounds exactly like the breita that Rabbi Yosef brought us. B'tani idach. And then another breita that supports this. Lo yase adam bayit tavnit eichal. Person should not make a house with the same dimensions as the eichal. Aksadra keneged ulam. And he should not make an entranceway like the ulam. Even though the eichal itself is not really an aksadra, because it has walls on all four sides. And we know that an aksadra at least has one side open, or maybe more than that open. That's a machloket Rashi and Tosafot that we've seen before. Nevertheless, the Eichal has walls on all four sides. So the Balei HaTosafot suggests that since the doorway to the Ulam was so big, it was as if it looked like an Aksadra. It looks similar to an Aksadra, and therefore that's why it's compared to an Aksadra over here. Or you have to say that Aksadra just means an entranceway, a antechamber to enter in, and just like the Ulam is an antechamber, so too the Aksadra, which acts in that way, should not be sized the same way as the Eichal. Chatzer keneged azara should not make a courtyard the size of the courtyard. Shulchan keneged shulchan should not make a table similar to the shulchan of the lechem apanim. Menorah keneged menorah, you shouldn't make a menorah that's identical to the menorah of the mikdash. The reason for this is the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says is because lo tasuni ti, that you're not allowed to make with me, mean dmut v'shamshai. You're not allowed to make things that are in service of Hashem. You're not allowed to replicate them or duplicate them. That has implications for constellations and other items as well, including the things that are found in the Mikdash that are used in service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. On the other hand, the Rambam indicates that the problem is Morah Mikdash, that it's a lack of awe for the Mikdash, which is a requirement in Mitzvah Umimikdashai Tirau, that you have to have a sense of awe from the Mikdash. And that sense of awe would not allow you to replicate the Mikdash outside of the Makom HaMikdash, and that's what the problem is in building these items that are similar to the Mikdash. But he is allowed to make Shal Chamisha, Belshisha, Veshal Shmona. He's allowed to make it out of 5, 6, or 8 branches. So it's clear here, speaking about the menorah. And this is what we know as the phenomenon of not mimicking the menorah of the Mikdash, which has 7 branches. And that means that generally when these items were pictured, especially later in Bayit Sheni, that they only made the menorot with either 8, 9, 5, 6 branches. A lot of the archaeological sites they found, the carved out menorot in the stone, were not made with 7 branches for that reason. Although in the Mishnaic times, we do find evidence of menorot that were made with 7 branches in them, because they were only pictured, they weren't the physical menorah. There's a big difference. I mean, by the time of Bayit Sheni, they think it applies not only to a menorah itself, but even the picturing of a menorah. They try to make it so it's not the 7 branches. On the other hand, it seems earlier on, they only worried about actually making the menorah, but when they pictured the menorah, they used to make pictures of the menorah that seemingly were identical to that which was done in the Mikdash. Shel Shiva lo yaseh. You cannot make a 7-branch menorah. Va'afilu mishar manei matechot. Even if you make it out of other metals. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda omer, af shaleitz lo yaseh, kederach shasu malchei beit chashmonaim. They can't make it out of wood, because that's what the chashmonaim did. So in the end, what the answer is you can't mimic the menorah of the Mikdash. Well, the menorah of the Mikdash can be made out of any metal, and has 7 branches. So that means you can't make a menorah out of any metal with 7 branches. That's the view of Rabbi. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda says, even out of wood it's problematic to make a menorah of 7 branches. And he says, my evidence to that is that the Chashmonaim used a wooden menorah. Amrulo, Misham Raya. What are you talking about? It wasn't wood over there. Shipudim shel barzelayu. They had spits of iron, v'chipum bebatz, and then they covered them with tin to make it look like it was silver. They tried to create like a plated iron so that it looked like silver. And as Tosafot points out, that they were shipudim, spits, because they didn't have any of the ornaments or adornments that are on the menorah, because that's only true when it's zahav. When it's not zahav, you don't have the kaftorim, the prachim, and the gvi'im. That's why they were actually spits over here. Hey, Shiru, once they got wealthier, Asum Shokesef, then they made it out of silver. Chazrube Shiru, they got even wealthier, Asum Shokesef, then they made it out of gold. So they slowly but surely upgraded the menorah until it reached the point where it was made out of gold. So the Chachamim agree that different metals were used, but exactly that, different metals were used. They did not think that it started as wood. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda thinks that the Chashmonaim started out with wood. Part of that confusion is either an machloket emitziyut, what happened back there with the Chashmonaim, or the other possibility is that the machloket revolves around what it looked like. It could be that the tin, once it discolors a little bit, has the same coloring or same character traits as wood. And so when you looked at it, it might have appeared like wood, even though it was not made out of wood. So that may be some of the confusion. Was it really made out of wood? Or was it made out of this metal that was plated with tin? So what Rabbi Yosef did now was bring two braitot that make it clear that Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Yehuda's position is that eitz is okay by the menorah, and Rabbi's position is that any metal is okay. Both of those braitot support the braitot that Rabbi Yosef brought, which says that that's the machloket between them. Machloket between them is metal only, according to Rabbi, or even wood can be used, Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Yehuda's position. According to Rabbi Papa Barchanin's explanation, none of these braitot can be explained, because he believes that Rabbi believes it's only Zahav and Kesef, and even Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Yehuda only believes you can use metal, you can't use wood. So none of these braitot that say that Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Yehuda says eitz will match with the braitot of Rabbi Papa Barchanin. And for that reason, Rabbi Yosef says, get rid of the braitot that you're bringing. I have another braitot that indicates otherwise. And not only do I have that braitot, I have numerous braitot that back up the view of the braitot that I am bringing. All right, so now we're going to move on to the structure of the menorah. This is a little bit complicated. There are a number of things to know about the menorah. The first thing is that the menorah has seven branches. The seven branches rise to the point where they come to a flat plane on the top. You have the central branch, which is the menorah itself, basically. And then it has three branches going from each side that rise to the point that they're level with that middle branch. It's not like today where we have the Chanukiot, we have a Shamash that's a different level than the others. Here, the central branch is the same height as all the branches that are next to it. It's a seven-branched menorah, six branches extending from the central branch, all coming to a plane on the top. The question is, how do those branches rise from the menorah? So there is different views within the Rishonim. The way that the Ibn Ezra says it, just agulim arukim chalulim, that a branch, so the way that the branch is described over here, kanim, kaneh, is something that's hollow. That's first of all. He says agulim, they were round, and chalulim. So he seems to say that they were round and hollow pieces. So makes it sound like they either were bent, or agulim could mean that they were circular in nature. The piping was circular. It doesn't mean necessarily that they were bent. Rashi in the Chumash says, Yotzi Mitzidah, with regards to the menorah, says, Lekanu Lekan Balachson, that they rise away from the center. Balachson is on an angle, on a straight angle, not on a curve coming out of it. And the Rambam, in his picture that is found in the Perush HaMishnayot, also draws a menorah with a angle of them coming up straight to the top. So there you have evidence of what the menorah looked like. The problem is that there seems to be overwhelming evidence in the other direction, which is that the rising branches were not straight, but rather rounded. First of all, the menorah that is found on the Arch of Titus, over there, the menorah that's pictured on the Arch of Titus has rounded branches that are extending out. If that is a true picture of what they took from the Mikdash, which seemingly it is, that would indicate that the branches were not coming up on a straight angle, but rather on a rounded angle, as well as the fact that we have many archaeological findings, which I mentioned before, from menorot that were found in Batei Knesiot from Tkufat HaMishnah. There's a menorah that was found in Beit Alpha, there's a menorah that was found in Yericho, and the menorah that was pictured in Tzipori. All of those menorot have rounded branches that are rising up to be level. These are mosaics that are found on the floors of these shuls. And in all those cases, the menorot that are pictured, first of all, with seven branches, these are not menorot that have eight or five or six branches to them. They have the full seven. They're pictured like the menorah of the Mikdash. Also, the menorah that was printed along with the Perush HaMishnayot of the Rambam at the end of the Masechet Menachot shows rounded branches. It's clearly not the Rambam's picture, because the Rambam from the Kitab Yad that we have of the Rambam's Perush HaMishnayot, we find a different menorah, which I've also brought for you over here, as well as the fact that the menorot that are found in the Keter printing of the Mikraot Gedolot also has rounded branches that are going up. In addition, all of those menorot have different pictures about a number of items. One is the base of the menorah. What did the base of the menorah look like? Rashi claims the base of the menorah was a teva, triangular in nature, or it's like a squared out box at the bottom with three legs on it. Whereas the Rambam seems to think it was a circular base, and there are others that seem to indicate that it was like a tripod base with 3 feet that came out of it. And again, the Arch of Titus shows it with a boxed bottom on it, whereas the pictures from the shuls in the time of the Mishnah all have tripod bottoms to it. And then the other pictures, whether it's the Rambam and others that we find, have some sort of a mix between those two things, whether they're rounded legs coming off or a box with legs coming off of it. So that's also something that is a discussion. The other thing which we'll discuss along the way was how these particular items laid out on the menorah and how exactly they look. So it just gives you a sense. I sent you the pictures to look at. The other thing I did was there is now the menorah of the Makon HaMikdash that is found in Yerushalayim. And what I did for you now is, based on what we're going to see now in the Gemara, I annotated that menorah to show you what they did based on what we have here in the Gemara about both the height of the menorah as well as the layout of the items that are found on the menorah. So if you take a look at it, it might be helpful while we're reading the Gemara, or you can take a look at it afterwards just to understand this Gemara better. Amar Shmuel, Mishmei de Sabo. Shmuel says over in the name of the Sabo, the elder, Gova Shel Menorah, 18 Tvachim. The height of the menorah was 18 Tvachim. So now, first of all, we have no indication in the Torah that the menorah is 18 Tvachim high. There is nowhere where it tells us the height of the menorah. There is a hint in the Pasuk, which is Zeh Maseh Menorah. Vizeh in Gematria is 18. So some cite that as the source for the fact that the menorah is 18 tefachim high. Others cite the Shulchan as being the source for that, because we know that the Shulchan itself was 9 tefachim high, and the Snipim that held up the stacks of the Lechem HaPanim were 18 tefachim high. And since the menorah was mul, the Shulchan, was opposite the Shulchan, that in a balanced way it would be the same height. Either the 9 tefachim to the base of the Shulchan will also be the 9 tefachim to the base of the menorah, and then another 9 above that to be equal to it for the upper part of the menorah, or the snipim are 18 tefachim high, so too the menorah will match that in being 18 tefachim high. The Tosfot quotes this in the name of the Rabbeinu Tam, but then he says afterwards, the Venira, the law of my Rabbeinu Tam, that there's no way the Rabbeinu Tam ever said this, because he says that the menorah was the Tzorech HaShulchan, and therefore was at the same height as the snipim, which were 18 tefachim. But he goes on to prove that the snipim were for the lechem apanim, and they didn't reach up to 18 tefachim. That was not the height, no matter which opinion you say later on in the Gemara. And so therefore he doesn't see this as being a source for the fact that the menorah was 18 tefachim high. So there's no exact reason why we know that it's 18 tefachim. It seems to come from a gathering of indications through parallel to other sources, or the gematria of Vizeh, that tells us that it should be 18 tefachim high. Haraglayim vaperach gimel tefachim. The feet, the base of the menorah, and the perach, and the flower is 3 tefachim high. Utfachayim chalak. After that, you have 2 tefachim that are plain, just a rising menorah. Vetefach shebo gvia v'kaftor baperach. And then after that, you have a single tefach in which you find these 3 items. The gvia, the cup. Kaftor is the ball, and perach is the flower. Where the Rambam says each of these 3 items on the Amud were found one above the other, whereas Rashi, we're speaking about the items actually extending out from the menorah itself. And that might be precipitated by the question that Bali Tosfot ask over here, which is that by the other items that we mentioned on the Kaneh, each one of them gets a tefach. Meaning that when it comes to the Gvim, the Kaftori, and the Prachim at the top of the Kaneh, each one gets a tefach. Then all of a sudden here, the one at the base, you have a single tefach for a gvia kaptor and a perach. So how does that work out? Rashi's solution to that problem might be to say that they weren't actually on the branch of the menorah, they're sticking out. And that's why there they only took up a tefach, as opposed to when they're integrated into the branch itself. Again, we're going to discuss these in a minute as to what these are. Utfachayim. And then after that, you have another tfachayim chalak of smooth with nothing on the menorah. Then the tefach. Kaftor. And then you begin what is now the part of the menorah from which the branches extend out. So the base of the menorah, if you just go through the math, was you have the raglayim and the perach were 3 tefachim. You have 2 tefachim chalak, 2 smooth tefachim with nothing on the rising center branch. That's 5 tefachim. You have a tefach in which the gevia and the kaftor and perach are found. That's 6. Utfachayim, another 2 were chalak. And then tefach, that's the beginning of the menorah, so that's the 9 tefachim that make up the base of the menorah. That's the bottom of the menorah, is the 9 tefachim. And from here, it will rise another 9 tefachim. So that tefach, you have a kaftor, you have a ball, ushnei kanim yotzim mimenu, echad elech v'echad elech. You have 2 branches that come out of it, 1 in each way, v'nim shachim olim k'neged govot shel menorah. And then they rise until they reach the height of the menorah. The menorah here references to the central branch. So now again, that's what we discussed before, whether they rise in a circular manner or they rise on a diagonal upwards. Betefach chalak, then you have another blank tefach, betefach kaftor, and then you have another bowl that is found there. Ushnei kanim yotzi mimenu, and then you have two branches that rise from there. Echad elach vechad elach, one in each direction. Nimshachim olim keneged gobot shel menorah. So they rise to the height of the central branch of the menorah. Betefach chalak, and then another blank tefach, betefach kaftor, and then another bowl. Ushnei kanim yotzi mimenu, and they have two branches that rise from it. Echad elach vechad elach, one in each direction. Nimshachim olim keneged gobot shel menorah, and they rise to the height of the menorah. You have now all the branches done. Now we're continuing on the central branch above the area of the branches. Utfachayim chalak. Then you have two tfachim that are blank, nothing on them. Nishtayru sham gimel tfachim. You are now left with three tfachim. We've already accounted for, in the base, nine tfachim. Then above that, we accounted for one tefach blank, one tefach kaptor, one tefach blank, one tefach kaptor, which is four more tfachim. And then we said two tfachim a blank. That's six tfachim. 9 plus 6 is 15 tfachim. We said the total height is 18. So you're left now with 3 tfachim. Shebehen. In that area, you have the gimel gvi'im. You have the 3 cups. Vikaftor and a ball. Uperach and then a flower. The Gemara now will explain these items that we just took for granted in the explanation of what Shmuel brought. Gvi'im. What are these gvi'im? What are these cups? The mahin domim. So kimin kosot alexandriim. They are like the goblets of Alexandria. Rashi says, "Shenasu be'Alexandria shel Mitzrayim ba'arukim v'tzarim." They are very long and narrow. Rashi describes them as being tall and narrow goblets, like a flute. The Rambam, on the other hand, says that they were actually goblets that were narrow at the bottom and wide at the top. So he actually draws it. When he draws his picture, he draws them as triangles to represent them. Not to say that that's what they are, but that to give you the sense of narrow at the bottom, wide at the top. And actually, in the Ktav Yad of the Rambam, he actually has them upside down. When Rav Kappa rewrote it, he wrote it with the narrow bottom and the wider at the top. The Rambam, in his own Ktav Yad, the picture, he draws them with the narrow towards the top and the wide end towards the bottom. So when you look at these pictures of the Norot, they have these cups that are sitting along the branches, the cups that are part of all the way up. Generally, they're facing upwards. But the Rambam, in his picture, actually shows the cups facing downwards. They're wide and then narrowing. You can see that in the Ktav Yad of the Rambam over here. He draws the triangle wide at the bottom, narrowing to the top. Rav Kappa, when he recreates the menorah of the Rambam, you can see here that he changed the triangles to be the other way around, where the cups are wider at the top and narrow at the bottom. But you can see here in many of the pictures that we find in the time of the Mishnah, they have these goblets that are facing upwards, where they have narrow bottoms and wider tops. So that's the Gvi'im that are being explained over here. Kaftorim, ma'im domim. What are the kaftorim? Kamin tapuchei akartim. So Rashi says over here, Makom, it's the name of a place. These are apples from that place, from Crete. So then that would be more along the round shape. Although the way that the Rambam suggests, and there are some of the pictures also show this, that it wasn't exactly round. They were more oblong. They're more shaped like an egg. They were not as round, but more elongated type of circles or balls that were there, not a round ball. Prachim namayim domim. So what are the flowers like? Kepirchei ha'amudim. Like the flowers on the pillars. So Rashi says, Pirchei ha'amudim. Tziurim shimitzarim ba'amudim. Where Rashi says that the flower that we're seeing right here is something that's actually etched into the pillar. Something that's drawn in there. Whereas the Rambam says that it's like a flower that is an ornament on the crown of a pillar. So it's actually something that's physically present there, formed out of the metal, rather than something that is carved or etched into the metal, like Rashi says. That is a good question about how the prachim work over here. Are the prachim something that's carved in or designed on the menorah itself? Or are the prachim actually a physical perach that's there? So now the Gemara comes to a conclusion and does some math for you. It says, V'nimtzu, based on everything we said here, Gvi'im esrim v'shnayim, the cups were 22. Kaftorim, the bowls were 11. Were 11. Prachim tisha, the flowers were 9. Gvi'im makvim zezeh, the gvi'im are makev each other. Kaftorim makvim zezeh, the bowls are makev each other. Prachim makvim zezeh, and the prachim are makev each other. Gvi'im, kaftorim, uprachim makvim zezeh. Not only are they makev, the internally, the numbers of each item, but in between them, in that one without the other is also makay, which means that everything is makev everything according to this view of the Gemara, and that's why the Baal Tosfot asked in the previous Amud, how come the Mishnah doesn't mention these items? So the answer the Baal Tosfot gave is maybe because they only apply when you make it out of Zahav. We saw that in the Gemara. Only when we get out of Zahav do these apply. When we make it out of other metals, they don't apply. So maybe that's why it's absent in the Mishnah. Now the Gemara goes, Bishlama, Gvim Esrim Ushnayim. I understand how you get to 22 Gvim, because the Sukkim make it easy to count them up. The menorah means the central branch of the menorah. There are four gvi'im. And then, on each one of the branches, at the top of the branch, are three gvi'im. So for the six side branches, each one at the top has three gvi'im. Six times three is 18. Then the central branch has four gvi'im, three at the top, one down and near the bottom area. That gives you four gvi'im. Those four plus the 18 is 22. So I know how to get to the 22 gvi'im. Because you add it up. Arba'adida, the four of the central branch. The tamne sari the kanim, and the 18 that are on the branches. Hasrim betartin, that's 22. Kaftorim nami, the kaftorim achadasar 11. That's not a problem. Kaftorim treidida, two from the central branch of the menorah. Bishisha the kanim, and six from the kanim. The kaftor, the kaftor, the kaftor. And then the three kaftorim. You have six on the kanim. So let's just work on the branches. The branches have, at the top, three gvi'im and then one kaftor. That means for the six branches, you have six kaftorim. Then, the branches extend from the menorah from a kaftor. Each kaftor allows the branches to go up. So you have three of those. That gets you to nine. Then, you have an additional two kaftorim. One at the top of the central branch, like all the other branches have at the top, the Shloshak Gvim and the Kaptor, that gets you to 10. And one at the bottom, that's together with the Gvia and the Kaptor that are at the bottom of the central branch, so that gets you 11. That's how you get the 11 Kaptorim. That's all easy. Ela Prachim Tisha Minolon. The nine Prachim, where do you get that from? Prachim Tredida. By the Prachim, you have the two from the central branch, and then you have Shisha the Kanim. And then the six of the branches. Again, at the top of the branches, there are three gvi'im, kaftor, vaferach. So that each branch has a perach on top, that's six. At the top of the central branch, you have a perach similar to that, that's seven. And then you have a perach that's on the bottom of the menorah, where you have a gvi'a, kaftor, and perach. We're all together towards the base of the menorah. So that gives you another perach, that gives you a total of eight. How are you coming up with nine prachim? So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Shalman, Div, Ad Yirecha, Ad Pircha, Mikshahi. That pasuk that's found in Balotcha adds on an additional perach, which is that when you make the menorah, Ad Yirecha to the base, Ad Pircha to the flower, Miksha. Where is that flower from? And you could have said, Ad Yirecha means the base of the menorah, Pircha means the top of the menorah, it has to be Miksha. That'd be the easiest way to read the pasuk. But he's reading the pasuk, Ad Yirecha, Ad Pircha, means that there's a perach at the Yerach. There is another flower down at the base of the menorah. And you see that in Rashi where he says, Ad Pircha, Riba Lecha Ketuv, Chad Perach. It added for you an additional perach. And that perach is at the base of the menorah. You have the Gimel Raglayim and a perach that are found at the base of the menorah. So there's an additional perach over there. Amarav, Govash Menorah Tishat Tzpachim. The height of the menorah is nine tzpachim. Eifei Rav Shimi Bar Chia the Rav. What do you mean? Even I thought lifnei menorah, there was a stone in front of the menorah. Ubash shlosh malot. There are three steps on it. Shalei Kohen omeid umeitibet and erot. That the Kohen goes up it in order to light the candles. There's no way if it's nine tzpachim high that the Kohen's climbing up three stairs and lighting the candles. It's just way too high up. If you have a menorah that's 18 tzpachim high, you can understand why he goes up three stairs and then he's doing the hatavat and erot. But if it's nine tzpachim high, there's no reason for you to have the three stairs there. If you're on the three stairs, you're way above the menorah. Amalei, shimi at? You're shimi? They're the Rav Shimi that they speak about? Ki amina misvat kanim ulamala. What I'm saying about is from the beginning of the kanim and upwards. And that's what we said before. The base of the menorah is nine tzpachim until the first kaftor. And then after the first kaftor to the height of the menorah is another nine tzpachim. So he's just saying, I'm just telling you what the upper half of the menorah is. Or you could be just telling you, I'm telling you what the lower half of the menorah is. All right, we're going to stop here. 11 lines down on the top of Kaftet Amud Aleph.